welcome to another episode of All of My Issues. In this episode, episode 40, we talk about our favorite Stephen King things. We also find out what Sam really thinks about The Shawshank Redemption and what Morgan Freeman thinks about Sam's thoughts about The Shawshank Redemption. All right, without further ado, let's get started. I'm Rick.
I'm Sam.
I'm Chris.
All right, today we're going to talk Stephen King. I guess basically the idea for this podcast came from the not-so-successful Dark Tower movie, and hopefully it will be, the It movie will be successful.
And speaking of psychotic clowns.
Yes, right there.
Squeaky the clown in the background again. Making his second appearance.
That's right. Our mascot for the podcast,
exactly.
I think, maybe. So, yes! That's today's topic. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we get into the topics? I guess we didn't really have anything planned too much. I mean, we've been watching Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
That is a thing.
Leaks like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, man.
It's got more leaks than a produce store.
Right?
They would protect that with their lives.
I know.
I would be careful what I say right here, because as of this time, episode 5 has aired officially.
Yes.
Episode 6, they accidentally showed in Spain and, like, Denmark or someplace.
Yeah, the Nordic HBO, I think.
And yes.
Something like that.
Fear the North.
Yes, Fear the North.
Well, the North remembers.
Yes.
And also records, whereas Spain did not.
Oh!
As we waited for hours, constantly refreshing the button for a link to it. It never came.
Oh,
come
man.
Come on, Spain!
Spain, get it together.
And they got, you know, the Pirate Bears. They got that stuff that all down.
So apparently the Pirate Bay is up around.
Yeah.
In the Nordic areas. Yeah. Regardless. So I will be very careful to try not to include any episode 6 spoilers or episode 7 spoilers, since I've read exactly what happens in there.
Oh! Yeah,
I know who lives and who dies.
Oh, man.
Mm.
It's blowing my mind a little bit that there's only just 2 episodes left of this season.
Wow.
That's kind of crazy.
So the last episode that aired was
they're getting ready to go face some White Walkers.
Yes.
Yeah, which I saw a great internet meme that showed them all walking away, and it was a still photo of that with health bars over their head in a World of Warcraft quest, like bring home the white or something like that.
That's awesome. All right.
So
yeah, I guess that's pretty much. And the Defenders.
Yeah, the Defenders
just started.
Started this week.
Yep.
I've seen 0 of it.
I've seen half of the first episode, and what I saw so far, I liked. We'll probably give more of a full...
After we watch it.
Yes.
Yeah. We can't really review it when we haven't seen it.
Right.
Besides, this episode should belong to Stephen King.
It should. It really should. You're right. So I guess maybe we'll just go right to the King.
All right.
What tradition holds.
Yes. And what do we always say?
Something about tradition.
Yeah.
Tradition.
If we don't have anything, we have tradition.
Yes.
Something like that.
You think we would have got this down by now.
I know. One of these days.
So our topic is our favorite Stephen King
properties.
There you go.
So that
not like his house in Maine.
Yeah.
Or his house in Florida.
Yeah.
His house in
the bedroom on the second floor that he sleeps in that we look at through the window. I mean, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you ever hear the story about the fan that broke into his house?
Yeah.
And he like jumped out the window to get away from
him? He's had a lot of weird fan encounters, I think.
Yeah.
Probably.
Then the fan now somebody else that hit him while he was
in the van. Yeah.
That wasn't a fan.
That was
It was just a
random
person.
Yeah. Still pretty crazy.
Pretty crazy.
But luckily he made a full recovery, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. All right.
So we're all three big fans of his work. So
Yes.
So some of it's better than others, et cetera, et cetera. Right now we're going to talk about our favorites. Not necessarily the best.
Exactly.
A lot of favorites.
Things that we're fond of.
Yes. All right. I'm going to go first. My number five is from 1985. It is Cat's Eye.
Oh, that's a good one.
Cat's Eye. The reason why I picked this movie because this was actually my first Stephen King movie that I ever watched.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, it always came on HBO all the time.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, it's Cat's Eye.
Watch that.
It was like, oh, and basically, it was also kind of my first time seeing James Woods. Because
because
Drew Barrymore, it was E.T., so I knew her from E.T. So it was like, oh, hey, that's that girl from E.T. But this was my first time experiencing James Woods before Videodrome. I didn't see Videodrome yet.
Hmm.
That's
weird because it was mandatory viewing for my kindergarten class.
All hail to the new flesh.
Whoa.
But Cat's Eye was followed the stray cat that was on a quest with
named Ryan Setzer.
Yes, following I'm trying to remember, was it a troll? I think it was a troll.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Because there was that. Yeah. The whole storyline about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just. Let you go.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, and it had three different.
Kind of excited there.
three different stories of the cat. Not necessarily involved in most of the story. It wasn't about the cat until like the last story, but the cat would make an appearance. There was one where a man, you know, James Woods' character was trying to quit smoking, and he a neighbor of his gave him a number to a place that stopped him from smoking, and so he employed this company to help him stop smoking, but this company had kind of sinister's way of stopping people from smoking, so that was challenging. And then you had the man who owed money to I think a mobster, and they made a bet to do this walk around a skyscraper and everything. So, and then, you know, there was the cat's journey where it had to find the goblin, because there was an old wise tale that you don't let cats sleep with in the bed with you because they steal your breath.
Right.
But it ended up that wasn't the case. Cats were the protectors. Because there were little goblins that would come out of the wall, and those were the things that stole your breath, and that is what the cat was protecting from. And you get to see little Miss Drew Barrymore in this film. So, Cat's Eye is my number five. Every time it comes on, I watch it.
I don't know if I've actually seen Cat's Eye all the way through.
What?
I know that might come as a bit of a surprise, but I've read the short story about the smoking.
Okay.
So I know that one. That has to do with, like, they kill someone, right?
They will put your loved one in this box where the floor is electrical, and they start... will shock them and everything, and then some other things, they'll start cutting off fingers, and...
Yeah, it just gradually gets worse and worse.
It gets worse and worse, yes.
So I really don't have much to say about this choice, particular choice, because I can't.
I'm surprised you haven't seen
it. I hate Drew Barrymore. I didn't hate Drew Barrymore then, though, so...
That's pretty close to E.T. time.
Right! Yeah, I don't have anything against young Drew Barrymore. I don't know, at some point in there, I just... couldn't stand the way that she talked.
Stumps us out of her mouth.
Yeah.
Like she's being, you know.
But I think you're
like a little bit of a smirk.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why I don't like her. I just don't. I don't have a valid reason.
Fair enough. Yeah.
She's your Deborah Messing?
Yeah. I mean, she's not quite my Meghan Trainor, but she's pretty close. She's like a proto Meghan Trainor.
No, I love the movie, actually. Yeah. That's. I sorry. The as I've said before, I love the anthology type collections of movies and stuff like that. So that, and that's exactly what this is. And I love the different stories and how they're all connected together. And just I actually watched this last Halloween, so that's the latest I saw. So no, I love it. I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah.
I watch it every time it comes on as well.
Exactly.
It's one of those movies.
I don't know the last time I saw it on, so that's my excuse.
Yeah, yeah.
I have not had a chance to stop while it was on.
Gotcha.
All right, well, my number five.
All right.
Is a 1978 book called The Stand.
The Stand.
Yes.
And
it's an REM song, right?
Yes, it is. It's actually the story of Michael Stipe surviving a virus that wiped out most of Georgia. And he went on to found REM.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. I thought that was... Yeah.
You know how they delivered the virus?
How?
B-52s.
B-52s.
no. So, it's the story of a virus, a genetically modified flu that wipes out most of the population. It's a really sprawling novel. It's been... It was released first in 78, and then they came out with a hardcover that was slightly more, and then a complete version of it, like in 1990-something, and updated the references, and each time they
added more, right?
Well, they set the year farther in the future, because the 78 one, I think the year that the virus was supposed to break out was 80. You know?
They kind of keep
updated a few more times. It's not scary in the way that Stephen King books sometimes are, though there are some uncomfortable scenes and things like that. But it's kind of interesting to watch the fall of society from different groups. And they break into two, basically a good group feels a yearning to go to Iford, Colorado. Something.
Yep.
And the other one is kind of their version of Mordor is Las Vegas. And the villain, of course, is Randall Flagg, who shows up in several other works. And the only reason it's not higher up my list is because I hate the ending of it. And I don't...
Is it how close is that... They had that that made-for-TV movie.
Yes.
How close is that to the book? Is that pretty...
It's nowhere near as thorough as the book because the book's 1,000 pages.
Ending is similar though, right?
I don't remember. Is a giant hand in the sky?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, literally, God out of the machine comes down and blows up the bad guys.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that's I can't get behind that. That's just. Yeah.
I was a little surprised by the ending, even on the made for TV show. But
yeah,
I just assumed, because I mean, not only that, but it looked kind of cheesy. I thought. But
it looked bad.
It's
but
TV,
I still think it's. I guess it's kind of clever to do a God out of the machine. It's the there's like two kinds of writers really, and there's a kind that plan everything out to a ridiculous degree, and then write it. And those are like George R. R. Martin.
Yeah.
And then you have Stephen King, who has a general foundation of what the story is, and then lets the story go out. And it makes for wonderful, sprawling reads, and that's the only complaint I have about his work is that sometimes the endings, if you don't write with the ending in mind that you're building towards it, sometimes you can go a strange place. And I felt like this one went a strange place. I mean, halfway through the book, he kills half the characters when something explodes and kind of makes it seem as if that God was angry that people were falling into the trap that, you know, of technology from before. And so I don't know. That was good. I was okay with killing half of the people, but then just having a random bomb blow up and destroys the bad guys. But it was well worth the other, you know, 980 pages of it or whatever it was.
It's the journey.
Yeah.
I think wasn't the miniseries on TV was like a week long?
Something like that. I do remember it was something
like
that.
It was like...
Yeah. It took time to watch it.
Yeah,
to watch it for sure. Yeah,
it was like 2 hours each day.
Yeah, yeah.
M-O-O-N, that spells Tom Collins. There was the one guy that was like, it might have been, who was it? Was it the dude from Coach that's Patrick?
Oh, yeah, okay.
And he thought everything was spelled M-O-O-N. His name was Tom Collins, and so he would randomly tell people M-O-O-N, that spells Tom Collins.
Yeah, because then he could
do vaguely
remember. He was sacrificed, wasn't he? Wasn't he one of the people that got sacrificed?
I honestly, I don't remember this. I just remember loving the. I read it in high school, so we've been separated from it. And then the miniseries I watched, I like the miniseries. Molly Ringwald and Rob Lowe and Gary Sinise.
I remember mostly liking it, but the ending, too, was just kind of one of those things where it kind of felt a little flat for me. Where it was just like, yeah, okay.
It's like the ending to the It miniseries.
Yeah.
Doesn't do the book ending justice, and it's kind of weak, but I'm okay with did anyone say It? I didn't say It. I didn't want to spoil anything.
Oh, okay.
Is It on your list?
No. Nope.
Okay, so I was okay with everything in It except for, you know, I thought the kids having sex with each other was a little weird in the book.
Oh, because I was going to say, I haven't read that book, but I don't remember.
Oh gosh, yeah. So at the end of the kid half of the book, that's the way they, after they defeat the monster, they make a pact that they'll all get back together and then they all have sex with the girl.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems weird.
Yeah.
That seems totally weird.
It's kind of saying goodbye to the childhood type thing is what I think what it's supposed to represent. Nonetheless, weird.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah. It's a little odd.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it'd be nice.
That was always the thing that struck me as a kid, and it doesn't strike me that way as much anymore, but I was reading Stephen King books at a pretty early, as soon as I got my adult library card, Stephen King books were one of the things I would start reading because I liked to be scared.
As soon as
I was able to. I mean, I wasn't like, you know, 10 and reading anything, but I would say I was probably in junior high when I started reading a lot of the Stephen King stuff. And there was always just like one random perverted thing in all of these.
Yeah.
And I never understood why. You know, you're reading Cujo about a sicko dog or whatever, and randomly some dude breaks into the mom's house and like whacks off on the bed. And you're like, why is that in there?
Does that happen? Yeah. How often does that happen?
And It had that, and I forget. The Stand had the serial killer and the weird dude shacking up together in the hotel along the way, and I don't know. I think he made him blow his gun or something like that. I don't remember. One random thing in every book. Except for Gerald's Game. There was nothing in that. I'm just joking. That's the one where the dude dies on top of her while she's handcuffed to a bed.
Oh, for real? Oh, okay. I've never read this, but now I've read the premise of it. That's okay. Yeah.
Which, who hasn't had that happen?
Yeah, I'm right. That's a common occurrence.
Yeah. I just call that a Friday.
That's right.
I just call that a Friday.
Yeah.
Friday.
A lot of hitchhikers in my backyard.
There you go. Whoa.
All
right. I guess we'll move on to mine. Mine is, I read this story in high school. So it's one that I always really enjoyed. And I don't think it's probably not high on people's Stephen King lists of books that are awesome or whatever. But it's the book is Eyes of the Dragon.
Loved it.
I loved it too. I think it's so good. But
featuring the villain?
Flag. And that's why I decided to go next with this one, because you want that.
Randall Flag, yes.
Yeah. So I figured, you know, it's a reoccurring character that kind of appears in a lot of his books. And Flag is the, like, the evil sorcerer.
Man in Black.
Yeah, the Man in Black. And also, like, the Dark Tower and everything. So, you know, he appears in many things. But in the Eyes of the Dragon, he's like a wizard.
It's like the Merlin, right?
Exactly. He's like the Merlin. And the story, it's a fantasy story. So it's kind of like a pretty, at the time, I think Stephen King really didn't do anything else fantasy related. The Dark Tower kind of, I think,
had elements later, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's kind of written totally like it totally doesn't necessarily feel like a Stephen King book either when you read it.
No, tonally, it's not.
Yeah, it's like totally, totally different as far as that goes. And it's a quick read and it's an easy read.
I think he wrote it, didn't he say for one of, like originally for one of his kids?
I think so too, I believe so. I think you're absolutely right.
By the time he
finished
it, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ignore what I'm saying, because it's a long memory.
Yeah. But I think, I'm pretty sure he did in fact write it for one of his kids, but I recall some weird things happening in it. Also, I think sexually related, maybe. That made me think that, oh, okay, maybe this wasn't for his kids. He decided to change it later on or something like that. Because I think there's one thing that happens early on in the book, if I'm remembering correctly, but I don't remember. It's because it has been some time since I read
it. It's been a long time since I read it.
Yeah, but I remember reading it and just loving it, though. So, the basic premise of it is it's a fantasy adventure. It takes place in the kingdom of Delane. And it involves a king who is poisoned, and a young, beautiful queen, a prince locked in a high tower while his younger brother assumes the throne, and then an evil magician who has plans on trying to take over the kingdom, and that magician wizard is Vlad. So,
wow.
Stephen King fantasy.
Yeah, Stephen King fantasy.
All
right. We all have them.
That's right.
Oh, never mind. I was talking about something else.
I think you're waiting for me to shake my head.
No, not yet. That doesn't count.
That was just a moment of uncomfortable silence.
Enjoy the silence.
Enjoy the silence. Just Stephen King fantasy.
It's my new sport is seeing how long to the podcast that Sam shakes his head. So. We haven't hit it yet, so this is, we're doing good.
Yeah, we're a little bit into this.
This is an endurance
hasn't
contest.
Happened yet. It hasn't happened. Yeah.
All right, my number four, Stephen King property. Salem's Lot.
Salem's Lot. Okay.
And you're doing movie.
I'm doing movie.
Okay.
I'm doing both the 1979 and the 2004 one.
I have not seen the 2004
one.
Oh,
Rob Lowe. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Huh.
It's pretty good. I gotta give Mr. Rob Lowe some credit here. Hmm. Being in that's two Stephen King movies he's been in.
He was in
Stand and Salem's Lot. Basically, the premise of
I didn't even know there was a 2004 Stand.
Yeah, actually,
is it a TV series, miniseries?
Three episodes long.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, because there's Salem's Lot. There's Return to Salem's Lot. That was like in 1980. The original one was 1979. Then the second one was like 1980, like 82 or something like that. And then 2004, they redid Sam's Lot with Rob Lowe and Donald Sutherland.
Okay.
Really? That's a good cast right there.
Yeah, it is.
Donald Sutherland is Marlowe, I assume?
Donald Sutherland...
Isn't Marlowe the name of the vampire?
No. The bad guy from Blade Runner.
Rucker Howard?
Yeah, he's the main.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
A hobo with a shotgun.
Oh, that's such a great movie.
Now, Donald Sutherland was was the assistant to him, the one that was in the daytime.
That was in the shop.
Yeah. So.
It is one of my favorite Stephen King books. His second book, and after Carrie. And the idea was, you kind of thought, what would happen if the story of Dracula happened in the modern times?
Okay.
And it even set up with like some newspaper articles and some journals, kind of like Dracula.
Yeah, yeah.
But this time it's, you know, Dracula moving to America and just
taking over a small.
And might I add, and I don't mean to take over your pick, but might I add that the Toby Hooper 1979 version, I think it was.
Okay, yeah.
The guy that did Texas Chainsaw Massacre directed Salem's Lot. That blue vampire at the window.
Nightmare fuel. Yeah.
Yes.
That messes with the young boy.
But I just, it's one of my like favorite kind of vampire movies because it was just like so. They took over the town like it was nothing. like just quietly, and all of a sudden people are disappearing, and then people are coming back, and they're acting strange and trying to seduce people, and like kids, vampires are turning people into vampires like nothing.
Yeah, and it's gradual.
It's like real gradual. You would think like no one caught on to this, and then the people who did catch on just let it happen.
Did you read the book?
I did not read the book, no.
Gosh. So the thing about the book, and I think to a lesser degree the movie, is the book will tell part of the story, and then the characters involved are all have this like this horrible thing going on in their lives underneath when you peel back the layers. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, one's an alcoholic who beats his wife or whatever, and I forget what all that is, but it's like it's the decay of like America that you're seeing,
and they want to,
and the vampire comes in and it just brings it all to a head, and they gradually become vampires and disappear. You know, kind of the theme of the book is about the decay of American society in general,
right? Because there's like one, I think in the 2004 version, there was like a kind of a maintenance man who was kind of disabled or whatever, and you know, the vampire comes up to him, he's like, I can take away everything, and they willingly give themselves to the vampire, and they become vampires. Or hey, you're an alcoholic, I can take that away, and it's like. It's like the whole decaying of society, like Chris was saying.
These vampires, they didn't sparkle, right?
No, they did not sparkle. But they were at least in the 2004 version, they were pretty fast. It was like one scene where the one vampire chick was trying to seduce somebody, and then the guy like turned around and tried to walk away, and she just right in front of him again, and
you know, and it doesn't have a happy ending. It doesn't have a thing where everybody wins. It's the town's gone. Nobody knows about the mysterious disappearance of all the people
in Salem's Lot. That's right.
And the boy and the father have, or not really the father. It's not his son, but he pretends after that to be the father. Are on the run for like the rest of whatever, because they don't want to settle down in one place and be found by the other vampires or whatever. So there's not really a
Well, technically, because I think it's 1979, I thought they kind of tried to, they tried to burn, but the vampire is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the vampire is still there. They took down the vampire, but.
It's a ghost town.
Yeah. I seem to recall, it's been such a long time since I've seen that movie, man. That's like, I can't.
There was a separate short story he did, too, about a snowstorm. And they sent me something mentioning about the. They mentioned about the lost town of Salem or whatever. I don't know. And
sometimes
you would hear terrible sounds coming from there.
So yeah. So my number four, Salem's Lot.
Salem's Lot. That's a
great
good pick.
Choice.
Yeah.
My number four is a short story. And a movie, and it is not the best short story, and it's not the best movie, but man, when I saw it, it had an effect on me. It is from 1977 collection. Well, it was first published in Penthouse magazine in 1977. I was young then, so I was like 3 or 4, so I did not read it there. it was published again in 1978 in the short story anthology Night Shift. And it's a story about a couple named Bert and Vicky whose marriage is on the rocks, and so they decide to take a vacation to California and are driving through rural Nebraska when a child comes running out of the cornfield.
Oh.
And they hit the kid and have to figure out what to do. And so, of course, Children of the Corn.
Yes.
Yeah. They want you, Malachi.
That dude, that little Isaac, that little man, when he comes back and in that movie and just does the, he wants you to, yeah, whatever, was so cool. The idea of religious fanatics taking over a town while, you know, not believable at all. No, you know, religious fanatics, the kids taking over a town and killing all the adults, and the idea of there actually being a supernatural force of the he who walks behind the rose, who, by the way, in the book The Stand, they talk about Randall Flagg's memories of, in the cornfields of Nebraska. So,
hinted that
so he's a demonic force of he who walks behind the rose. I don't know. It is just really, young me really thought that that was a really cool story.
Yeah.
Both the book and the movie. One of the first, probably, it might be the first time that I read a Stephen King short story anthology, which also included The Lawnmower Man, and that is nothing like the movie.
I've heard that.
Nothing. It has to do with the Greek god Pan. I don't even know how they... It literally is just the title. It's the only thing that hasn't come.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy.
So that's my pick.
That's your pick. That's a good pick. Children of the Corn. Who doesn't love that movie? And there's been like all kinds of sequels. Isn't there like four?
I think there's like six.
Six?
There's a lot of them. There's sequels and remakes. And it was before that movie came out, they did a short film.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. Really? I forget what it was. It wasn't called Children of the Corn. Then it was called something else.
Yeah. Even there's a sequel where Malachi, not Malachi, but Isaac comes back.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember which one it is, but yeah, he comes back.
Interesting.
What's you?
The only one I've seen is the first one.
Yeah, that's
Malachi. Yeah. My pick. It's also a short story that kind of had an effect on me. It's actually one of the ones that he wrote under the pseudonym of Richard Bachman, and it's The Long Walk. I don't know if you guys have read this one or not. Have you read it? I read this is a short story that I read when I was in high school, and that's is one of the reasons why it kind of got to me as well, is because the premise behind The Long Walk is it's essentially like a lottery or contest, if you will, where young males participate in a long walk.
Whoa.
And
that's an interesting title then.
It is. It is. But what they have to do in this long walk is they basically have to keep walking. And there's certain rules that are set aside. Like they can have breaks every certain period of time. And there's like little things that they can do. They can stop walking. And they have like 2 minutes or so before they have to keep moving again. I can't remember exactly how it goes. But basically what ends up happening, if they stop walking, they get killed. So everybody keeps walking until it's one guy survives and he wins the prize and all the money and everything. And so you kind of know early
it's like
on.
Speed without the bus.
Yeah, Speed without the bus. And they're all walking. But, and they have to walk at a certain pace and everything. So you kind of know, like, right from the beginning that you're introduced to all these characters and you know that only one of them is going to survive, at least within the confines of that game. And you get to learn about the different characters and what, you know, what why are they involved in this long walk. And, you know, it's a simple story. It's a short story. It's only like, I think it's like 100 pages or something like that. But I always thought that premise of it was just a really interesting.
I really like short story anthologies.
Yeah.
And even though that wasn't exactly a short story anthology, I mean, because they were, well, most of his books actually, the short story ones aren't considered to be, hey, this is going to be set up for just this. It's stuff he publishes in old magazines and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I love the story of him wanting to be Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
Because the book publisher didn't think that the market would hold extra books from, and he just wrote too fast, so he would put out stuff as Richard Bachman and see whether or not people would buy it. And then some librarian figured out who it was.
Yeah, it wasn't something where they saw the mailing address of the checks or something.
They followed some sort of paper trail that led back to the fact that Richard Bachman was Stephen King, and so Stephen King had to go public with it.
Yeah.
lest he be blackmailed, I guess.
Yeah. So then all those books were like then put together as the Bachman books, and Stephen King. So it's kind of interesting, I think, that he did that. Because The Running Man, I think, was part of that.
Running Man. Gosh, I forget which one.
Yeah, there's a couple
others. Beach,
others.
Was that one? No.
Yeah.
Rage.
Rage was one, yeah.
You mean not the Lady of Rage? Just Rage?
Just Rage. Okay. Just Rage.
Well, it's tough with my Afro Puffs.
Rage. All right, so yeah, that's mine, The Long Walk.
All righty. So. Number three.
Number three.
My number three is, we just kind of talked about a little bit it's The Running Man.
The Running Man.
Yes. Oh. Look at that.
I forgot that was on your list.
It was on my list.
Oh, that's a segue right there. Look at that. It's like we planned this.
Oh.
See, I'm not...
Part of the Bachman books. You know, I always love the story about Stephen King.
There you go.
See, I didn't read many of Stephen King's novels, so basically I'm basing my list on the movies. So.
But that's it.
That's
a fun movie.
It is a fun movie.
A
light bulb.
You had Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But most importantly, who'd you have?
You had Richard Dawson.
Yes. That's right.
You had Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yes. Yeah.
You had Jim Brown as Fireball.
Yes.
You had Professor Toro Takanaka as Sub-Zero.
Sub-Zero, that's right.
It's been so long since I've seen this.
It's such a good
movie.
It is so good. Yeah.
I mean, it's bad, but it's good.
Yeah, it's totally good bad.
A little fun fact, you remember Richard Dawson's henchman, Seven? S-V-E-N?
Yeah.
The big white guy?
Yeah.
That was his actual real name.
Yeah. Because you know what? If I'm remembering correctly, that guy has been in a bunch of Arnold's other movies. Like, he was... one of the guys that he fought in Conan the Barbarian.
Yep.
And he was also in... yeah, because...
Seven Ola Thorson.
Thorson, yeah. Sven Thorson, I think.
So he was in Gladiator, The Running Man. He was in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, yep.
Let's see. What are some other ones? He was in...
Running Man, Lethal Weapon, Hunt for Red October.
He was in Charlie's Angels, Full Throttle.
Oh!
He was in The Rundown. He was in Collateral Damage, The Sum of All Fears.
Man.
Are you not? End of Days. I do remember him in End of Days.
Oh, I don't remember. Yeah.
Let's see. Unfortunately, he was in George of the Jungle and Crawl the Conqueror.
Can't all be winners.
That's right.
Eraser.
See, he's been pretty much almost in every
movie. Kids, he was also in Mallrats.
Oh, that's right. Oh. He was in Mallrats.
Oh, dude, who was he? Yeah. What was his name?
LaForce.
That's it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Come, son of Jor-El. Kneel before his own.
That's good. Good stuff.
So, and he was also in the Flash miniseries.
Huh.
The television show. Hmm. Oh, yeah, he's had a career here. Captain Planet and the Soldiers of the Future.
I was going to say, I thought he was in Captain Planet. Too.
He's in another Arnold movie, Red Heat. They're both really good friends.
Yeah.
Predator. He was in Predator.
Well, he's a bodybuilder from Europe, so.
Yeah.
That's true. And Raw Deal. Man, him and Arnold.
Yeah.
Red Sonja.
Yeah, that's right. He was in that, too. That's right.
He was in both Conans. The Destroyer and the Barbarian. So. I like The Running Man.
There you go.
I thought
Richard... And apparently Sven Ole Thorsen as well.
Yeah.
I just think Richard Dawson was just... he was just a kind of a good villain.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he was awesome.
I've never seen him act in anything. Yeah. He was Family Feud host for as long as I've ever known
him.
Yeah. And that's the only thing I know him from. So it's pretty cool to see him. I mean, that's not true. He was in Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah. That's true. But no one from
nothing's funnier than World War II camp.
Exactly. Right.
I said nothing. Yeah.
Nothing.
Schultz.
All right. Yeah, Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future. That's what the. Yeah.
That was ahead of its time.
That was ahead of its time.
I don't remember that.
Oh, that was.
We'll have to.
I might, maybe, if I saw something.
Yeah, we gotta show you.
Yeah.
Because I had Captain Power and I had the Charger Station.
Yeah.
And I used the Charger Station playing on Saturday morning. I would get my Charger Station and
Captain Power. Shoot the
red squares.
Yeah. Yeah, those in internet land, maybe do like a Google search and you'll see what we're talking about. And there's probably videos on YouTube, I'm sure.
Yes.
It's pretty awesome, actually.
It really was.
This is... See it.
Oh, that... Oh, man, I remember that now. Oh, I don't remember much
Captain
about it.
Captain Power. See, that's...
Yep. I
was surprised. You know what? Really, it's surprising it didn't take off more than it did.
It was probably expensive.
Yeah, it was probably expensive. I remember loving it though. Yeah. I was like, oh man, look at this!
I think I either got it for my birthday or Christmas, and I was like, yes, because you know my parents couldn't like afford the plane because everybody wanted the plane.
Yeah,
but I got the power station instead, and when he stepped in front of the power station, that's when he turned into Captain Power. So I was like, oh, and you still use it when you're watching the show. So I was like, sweet. So,
yeah. So meta, you could play games while watching shows.
Exactly.
Yeah.
you're trying to get exercise on Saturday morning.
Those kids can't just sit down and watch this show. They got to interact with it.
They at least got to move their arms.
Yeah.
All right. My number three is The Green Mile.
The Green Mile.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, the movie featuring Tom Hanks and a whole host of people. But the story of a prison guard who's old and in a retirement home and is watching a movie and it reminds him of something and he tells another retiree the story of John Coffey, an incredibly powerful but mentally challenged
kind of guy. Yeah, yeah.
Who was accused and convicted of raping and murdering two little girls. It's just a really well-told story with some small supernatural elements and the fact that John Coffey has the ability to heal people. But he didn't kill the girls. He instead was trying to heal them and couldn't. And whenever he was healing people, he referred to it as taking it back. And so he was found with the girls saying, I tried to take it back, but I couldn't. Long story short, it's just a really great movie. Great performance, Michael Clark Duncan.
Yeah.
And the, I don't know his name, but the little Weasley dude, the guy. I just want to punch him. Purposely not wetting down the sponge so that the guy suffers.
Suffered, yeah. Oh, man, yeah.
And then Mr. Jingles, the mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a fun movie.
Yeah.
Fun.
That's a good movie. Stephen King, you know, when he doesn't do horror, he does really good.
Yeah, you will know that from my other picks.
Yeah, yeah,
as well.
Yeah. Because even The Long Walk, it's not really, you know, I wouldn't consider that a traditional horror movie or horror story or anything like that, but it's just like he takes something and just goes with it and into a direction. And,
you know, and the thing of it is that a lot of his stories touch on the supernatural without being overly horrific.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does a really good job. I really feel like people, a lot of literary snobs don't like him because his work deals with what it deals with.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's going to be one of a handful of authors, I think, who are remembered for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel it's probably only a matter of time before they're teaching his stuff. I mean, I'm sure some places do, but actually studying, because he's got just a huge body of work.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's diverse, too. It's not like he's never... It seems like he tries to challenge himself and go in different directions as well. So,
I mean, he likes what he likes. He likes to write what he likes to write. And guess what? I like that stuff, too.
Yeah.
So, hey.
Yeah.
F you, scholars.
There you go, right? He wouldn't be popular if people didn't like him.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, there you go.
Wish I had Stephen King money.
Ah, hey, don't we all? All right, I guess that leads to my pick here. And my third pick is an anthology of sorts. This is also, it's both a movie and a comic book. And the movie I'm talking about is Creepshow.
Ah.
I love this movie. I thought it was great. And it kind of plays in on the whole comic book theme in the movie, to where the movie starts out with like with the pages of a comic book and everything. And
like a Tales from the Crypt style.
Exactly,
comic book, like
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really enjoyed those too, those old horror comics. I would go and look for those in comic boxes and try to find them and everything and go back and get them. And a lot of times those were just really clever little stories with a twist. And that's what Creepshow kind of is. You know, one of the stories involves a murdered man returning from the grave.
Okay.
A bizarre meteor. And in that movie, that story that
with
actually
Stephen King.
Has Stephen King. Yeah, and that's the Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill. Then there's the story of the crate, where they have this...
Yeah.
I don't really want to get too much of the premise away, because somebody might want to go and watch this movie that hasn't seen it. And then the last story in that anthology was Something to Tide You Over.
Oh!
Yeah! With Ted Danson and Leslie Nielsen. I just love that whole series of creep shows. They've done other... Creepshow 2. And they've actually gone beyond that, but the ones after that I haven't liked very much. But Creepshow 2, I enjoyed
the first Creepshow, was it the one with it was one of those stories, with the tar stuff in the lake?
That was actually Creepshow 2.
Two, okay.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, and I really like the comic book 2, because that features artwork from Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah, I remember the comic book.
Yeah.
I believe I read the comic book without buying it at the local IGA while my parents were shopping.
So, yeah. it's just a great story. It's fun. Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It's fun. I watched it actually not all that, within the last year.
Yeah, I have it.
I mean, it's dated. It's clearly dated.
It is, yeah.
You can't
dated.
Go into it expecting modern day whatever, but
no.
For just pure nostalgia, it was fun.
Yeah, having this as a watch. And Bridget, or Adrian Barbeau, right? It's Adrian Barbeau, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I forget. Was she in the... I forget now. Was that the Crow from
the
Crate?
The Crate, yeah. Yeah.
Which also featured... was it the dude from Empty Nest? Is he in that one?
Yeah, oh, I think you're right. I think so. Yeah.
I don't know why I'm full. Dude probably had a 40-year career.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he's just in that.
He's in Empty Nest, that spinoff from Golden Girls.
And I think Tom Savini. Yeah, Tom Savini did a lot of the. He was the creature guy that was in the beginning of it that threw the comic book out.
Yeah.
That started the whole story. It's just really fun.
Ed Harris,
that's, he's in as well. That's right. He's in the, I think he's in the Father's Day one. I think.
Yep. Yes, you're correct. Father's Day.
So yeah, it's just, it's good. I enjoy it. But you're right, it is dated. But it's one of those things where I watch and fills me with nostalgia. That's my number three.
All right.
Yeah.
And what does that mean?
It is time.
Oh, where are we at?
The R. Kelly. Mindless Slaves Memorial.
Not number one.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the number one.
Yeah, this is getting
to the number two. We're at the deuce.
Yeah, we're dropping it on you.
My gosh. You don't want to jump the gun and finish too quick.
You go from two to one.
When you're dealing with R. Kelly. My gosh.
Oh, man.
What is wrong with me? It's been a while since we did top five, I guess.
It has been. It has been some time.
But we are on the deuce. Number two.
Number two.
Just lay it on me.
There we go. My number two. We come back full circle to Miss Drew Barrymore.
Oh.
And
this, however, is one of, E.T. is one of my Drew Barrymore exceptions, as is this pick.
1984, The Firestarter.
Also a song by
Prodigy.
Prodigy, that's right. Firestarter.
I'm the Firestarter.
Yeah. Twisted Firestarter. You know what? You can't even say, you gotta say the whole thing. But this was about two people who were experimented on, a couple that volunteered to be experimented on by an organization, and they had a child who was a pyrokinesis, who can start fires with her mind. Her father was a telepath. And I'm trying to remember. Did her mother develop powers?
I think the mother developed powers, but she died. She was dead by the time the story was being told, right?
She died shortly after the beginning, because there was a time where Charlie set her mittens on fire. She had a temper tantrum.
Yeah, because the earliest part of the movie I remember, and it's been years.
Yeah.
Was the dad and her like in a cab, and he was
having
the guy take stuff that wasn't the denomination money, that and his nose was bleeding. Like, his power seemed to come at a price.
Yes he had a tumor, I think.
Yeah.
It is a tumor.
Every time he uses his powers and everything, and so the government agency catches both of them, and you know, they try to get Charlie to use her powers more and more, and you know, being a scared little girl, she just wants her daddy, and you know, so they try to escape, and her daddy is fatally wounded, and that's when you get the fire starter. So you got like a 9-year-old little girl who can start fires with her mind, about to have a temper tantrum because you just killed her daddy, and yeah, you're gonna send the reserves to try to capture her. That's not gonna end well.
George C. Scott.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
it's been a while since I've seen this movie too.
Yes.
Firestarter.
Just Firestarter.
It's like you know.
And I just kinda just thought, you know, it was just like she's kinda like the first kind of somewhat superhero that I've seen on screen.
I was going to say, this is a callback to kind of like one of our first podcast episodes.
Exactly. It is. Go swing it back around.
Yeah, look at that.
So, I enjoyed Firestarter a lot. And they've had a sequel or a retelling. I think it was called Firestarter 2, The Rekindling. And it had, what is his name?
Billy Joel.
Not Billy Joel.
He didn't start the fire.
Oh, man.
It's always burning.
It always burns.
The world's been turning.
The world's been turning. I will think of the guy because he always he does play a bad guy in a lot of films.
Give me another film he's been in.
I think he was a bad guy in Tank Girl.
Oh gosh.
Oof.
It's gonna bug me now.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's gonna bug me now. Hold on here. It's gonna bug me.
Tank Girl though.
I can't remember.
I can't remember it either.
I saw it
I just
once.
Remember Kangaroo.
Yeah, that was just Ice-T as a kangaroo.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Ice-T was the kangaroo.
Ice-T
that's
was
right.
The kangaroo.
That's right.
I prefer water tea.
Yeah.
Water tea.
Oh, let me see. I'm home, father.
Malcolm. Malcolm McDowell.
Malcolm McDowell.
McDowell. Yeah,
McDowell.
Malcolm.
Okay. Yeah. He's a great
and Dennis Hopper.
Guy.
Clockwork
and
Orange.
Yeah.
Heroes. Star Trek Generations.
Star Trek Generations.
Yeah.
Some reason you couldn't think of those.
I don't know. But you went straight to Tank Girl. Good job.
Yeah. What's the most obscure
Caligula.
Malcolm McDowell? Tank Girl. Not me, my droogs.
Yeah. I mean, like,
he's like one actor. He was in Hercules in New York.
Yeah.
Arnold something.
I mean, we got Clockwork Orange. You know, we had the remake of Halloween.
Right.
Oh, that's right. He's in that too.
Yeah, I mean, I could have named a whole bunch of other things, but Tank Girl was the only thing that came to mind here. Oh my goodness.
That's awesome.
At least I didn't say Death Race 2050.
I mean, I watched that, though.
I did watch that.
Are you ready for my deuce?
Yes!
Ready for the deuce!
I'm going to give you a deuce.
Give us a deuce!
Give you a classic deuce.
Classic deuce.
Mine is a 1986 film.
Ooh.
Directed by Rob Reiner, featuring Will Wheaton. Featuring Corey Feldman, featuring River Phoenix, and featuring Jerry O'Connell. Stand By Me.
Stand By Me.
Based on his short story, The Body,
yeah.
From different seasons. Such a good movie.
Yeah, that movie's an awesome movie.
And I watched it with my son. It was a little adult for him. Mm-hmm. Not terribly.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the story of four boys, coming-of-age film, trying to find a dead body. One kid finds out has been hit by a train, and they want to go see this dead body. But it's more about them, you know, growing up and the relationship. We were best friends as kids and how you drift apart and things like that. Oh, it's just so good. Chopper sick balls. and the leech scene, which apparently is autobiographical. little fun piece of thing. Castle Rock. It takes place in Castle Rock, which the production company is Castle Rock Productions.
Castle Rock,
Rob Reiner.
Yeah.
Directed that. The movie was actually bought by one movie studio that then got eaten up by another movie studio. And the other movie studio was about to halt production on it altogether.
Oh, man.
And Norman Lear from All of the Family, who's believed in Rob Reiner, put down $7.5 million of his own money to get it financed.
Wow.
The rest of the way. And it made $52 million.
I was going to say, it's probably a good investment.
Yeah.
However, they had trouble finding a distributor. Paramount passed on it. Universal passed on it. Warner Brothers passed on it.
That is crazy.
But it was such a good movie.
It is such a good movie. Yeah.
Bittersweet, I guess.
Yeah. It's probably, I guess, in hindsight, probably. I wonder if... One of the reasons why I wonder how soon they put the name of the movie made it Stand By Me as opposed to The Body. I wonder if that may have deterred.
I don't know. I would think they probably did it. I mean, it seems. I don't know.
You know, just because maybe, like, you know, you approach a movie studio, hey, I've got this movie where these kids go looking for a dead body, and you know, when it's really not about that, like you said, it's more about their growth and everything. That's a great movie.
Yep. It is. Yeah.
Keep yourself fun with the
night. Keep yourself fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was probably my first introduction to Will Wheaton.
Yeah, Will Wheaton.
Who I enjoy as a human being.
Yeah.
Just in general. So.
Yes. Who doesn't love Will Wheaton?
I don't know.
Sheldon Cooper, but they're friends.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. I guess that brings us to my deuce.
Drop it on us.
Drop it on you. So.
What about love your
it's
body?
It's a relatively, you know, not as fresh as maybe your deuce was, Sam. I think yours was maybe a little bit newer than mine. But mine came, this came out in 1990. It's both in a book and a movie. The movie I'm referring to is the movie. It came out in 1990. And that movie would be Misery.
Okay.
I read the book before I saw the movie. And it's,
yes.
And I was really excited to go see this movie because I thought, oh man, if it's close to the book, if it's anything like the book, it's going to be so good. And it's pretty close to the book.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. And yeah, just, I love the book so much though.
It's a really well-written book.
And it just, every little nuance, I mean, there's that, I can't, and this is the one problem, because I think because they're so close that I can't remember, is this the book or is it the movie, or was it in the movie and also in the book? There's one part in the book where, you know, he's super thirsty. I should say what the premise of it is. I don't know, probably, you know.
It's a writer.
Yeah, it's a writer.
Whose car goes off the road
in
the mountains during a snowstorm.
Yeah.
And he's rescued by a psychotic fan of his.
His biggest fan.
His biggest fan.
Yeah.
In the movie played by Kathy Bates.
Yes. And James Caan.
She won an Oscar for that?
She did.
She did, yeah. And James Caan was the writer.
Author, yes.
Yeah, the author, yeah. But yeah, there's this moment in the book where...
It's only in the book, by the way.
I think. Okay, yeah. He's...
Drinks his own pee?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And just the description he gives to... Man, it's... How I, you know,
it's your opinion of drinking.
Yeah,
as
that's
well?
What that's what I would think. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
just, you know,
a strong, like, smoky flavor.
Yeah.
A little bit of berry.
A little bit of berry. You know, depending on, you know, he had some wine before, so I think, you know, they got part of this thing. but just.
Oh no, I just assumed that you could taste, you know,
your
friend Barry.
Barry you know, they're Barry Dingle. Whoa. But just the descriptions that he gives, and just thinking, like, that whole moment that happens in that book, just thinking of what must have been going through him, you know, what obviously is on pee, but just for him to get to the point to where he had to drink his own pee to survive, and how he was trying to filter it through the sheet. It's just so, man.
So there was a change that they made from the book to the movie.
The foot. Yes.
I think. Yeah, where they used an axe.
Yeah.
And cut off his leg.
Yes.
In the book.
Yes.
I find the sledgehammer even more horrifying.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. It's because the axe, it's cut off and it's over.
Yeah.
The hobbling, where they actually showed it bending and breaking.
Yeah.
I don't like breaking limbs.
Yeah.
And, man.
I can see what you're saying.
So I think I preferred the movie.
Yeah. The moment though, like the description of how Stephen King wrote that moment in the book though, like, really sticks with me though too, because he talks about, you know, it wasn't one whack.
It took a lot.
It took like two whacks, and his legs were broken. So she hits his, you know, he sees her bringing the axe back. He knows what she's trying to do. His legs are broken. He's unable to bend his legs because they're broken, but he's still trying to bend them, and he's, you know, excruciating pain. The axe comes down. It does not cut through. Mm-hmm. He's still trying to pull his leg back, and his foot is just hanging by his calf muscle. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about it as he's pulling his leg. It's just, the foot is just hanging there. And she comes down again, you know, separating the foot from his leg. And he sees her carry off his foot. And on the bottom of his foot, he sees a scar he got as a kid on the bottom of his foot when he was at the beach with his parents. And it's just like, wow, it's like such a crazy image. Mm. I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you too. The image of it happening in the movie, I don't know, you know, having all that knowledge, you know, it's hard to convey that what was written into movie form, I think. But
true. I also find that the villain is especially Annie Wilkes is especially terrifying.
Oh yeah.
In that she'll hobble you. She'll cut off your leg. She'll keep you kidnapped. She'll do terrible things to you, but she won't swear.
Yes.
She is just a different kind of evil, and I've never seen a character like that. Almost like, not quite, but almost Dolores Umbridge from the Harry Potter thing that you haven't seen.
Yes, I haven't yet. I don't know what you're talking about.
or the mayor from Buffy.
The mayor from Buffy.
Yes, that's very true. Good pull. Yeah.
So it was just very.
Because she even had a name for that too. What was it, Duty Mouth or something? Like she had some sort of thing. Some
cock-a-doody.
Yeah, cock-a-doody, something like that. Yeah. Oh, but man, Kathy Bates is so good in that role though.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the first time I saw her.
It's the first time I saw her.
She probably had a story career before that.
She probably did too. But it's absolutely
she was
amazing. Probably,
was she in Fried Green Tomatoes? That was before that, right?
I think so.
I hadn't seen that though.
Yeah, I hadn't either. But yeah, I was so excited to see that movie. And that movie did not let down one bit. No. It was awesome.
That was a great movie.
Wow. Yeah. So drinking your own pee. And hobbling your foot.
Speaking of drinking your own pee.
Oh, where are we at?
What time is it? R. Kelly. Mindless Slave. Oh. Memorial. Number one.
Yeah. The
number one.
I'm going to piss on you.
You remind me of something. Okay. My number one.
Number one.
R. Kelly Memorial.
Spray me with your knowledge.
I'm basing this off the 1999 miniseries television movie, Storm of the Century.
Aha!
Now, you know, throughout my knowledge of all the different Stephen King movies and everything, this one, I think, for me, there was only one person out of the whole characters that I liked, and that was Tim Daly's character.
The
premise of A Storm of the Century is this stranger comes to town and is causing trouble by telling people their deepest, darkest secrets and making it known public, and then also this big, gigantic winter storm is coming to this, you know, New England town. And so all chaos breaks loose, and Tim Daly's character is basically, you know, the constable who is trying to keep everyone from going insane and everything. This stranger is causing all this havoc, and he only wants one thing. He wants a child from the town.
Oh yeah. It's been a while since I've seen this, because this was a made for TV movie, right?
This was a made for TV movie. Yep.
I remember it being really good though.
Yeah,
I remember it being really
good. And it just, they're like, what do you want? And he's like, what happened was he has these powers where he puts all the kids to sleep. The kids are not responding. Okay. They all fall asleep, and basically everyone is gathering around in this town hall because of the storm and everything, and all the strange things are happening. People are coming up dead and everything, and all the kids are asleep. And so the stranger comes in and says, I just want one child. I don't care who it is. I just want one. And then once I get that child, then all your other children will wake up and they will be fine. And so the townspeople are basically trying to decide whether or not they want to accept this deal, because basically this stranger is threatening to basically wipe them off the planet, which we refer back to the reference. I think there is a reference for Salem Lot in that movie also.
Oh, okay.
So it kind of brings it back. But it just made me feel like a number of things. One, if I am ever stuck in a public place with a whole bunch of people in New England,
yeah,
I'm going to get my butt out of there, because nothing good ever happens.
No, like
The Stand, The Mist, Storm of the Century, all these things, especially Stephen King, all these things, bad things, the bad things happen when the group of people become a mob. You're like, I'd rather take on the monsters that are in The Mist or the big gigantic snowstorm than stay in a cramped area with a whole bunch of New England people.
Well, you know, honestly, though, that's, I haven't seen this, but I will say that is a recurring theme through. There's a lot of recurring Stephen King themes, and one of them is the mob is the monster.
Yeah, yeah, because that is the monster in The Mist.
Even Cell, where the cell phone signal causes everyone to become like a hive mind bunch of zombies.
So yeah. New England, bad. Even with the Patriots, bad.
but it was just like the way the townspeople, it made me like so angry. And I was like, it made me think, what would I do in that situation where I'm in a group of people and like they're trying to decide, hey, whose child would we sacrifice? And is like, is that worth the needs of a few?
Are not full Spock?
Outweigh the needs of a few, or however. I'm getting that wrong.
The needs of the few.
There you go.
Or the one.
Yeah.
But it's like,
I'm visually giving him the live long and prosperous.
like what do you do in that point? And I'm going to be quite honest with you. I would not vote for anyone's kid. I guess I would be that one guy that says, no, let's just fight the guy and let him wipe us all out.
Yeah. I would do my best to vote last.
Yeah.
And so that my vote is because everyone's going to vote for someone else. Right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
I would probably take that tactic as well. Mm. So see who gets the most. I don't want to have the deciding vote, though, you know, if I have to. Choose.
But you're gonna choose to vote for somebody? That's what.
What Rick is saying is that he hopes that there will be a one kid who everybody hates.
Like they're like, hey.
So like there's like 40 votes for him already.
Yeah, he's not going to make anything out of himself anyways. Just, you know, he's got no future.
So that means you're going to literally vote.
Wow.
You're going to vote. You don't vote at all.
He waits to the end, so he's not the deciding vote. I ask, can I vote for everyone except for my kid?
There you go.
How you go? See, and that's the thing. And that's the thing that brought up. Like, how would you look your neighbor in the face after that happened? Because
it's I would not vote. I would wait till the end, and so I would have to be.
How do you look your neighbor in the face? Smiling with your kid.
There you go.
Oh, too bad about little Johnny. Oh, yeah. Can I keep his glove? I'm like, what?
I'm just telling you now, I'm a dangerous person to know in the apocalypse, the one that breaks out.
So, I know. Like, okay, there's certain people I'm like, I can't hang around with in the apocalypse.
No, you're good.
Yeah.
Because because you're inner circle.
Exactly.
Inner circle, yeah. We protect the others. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay? So
we help make the hard decisions.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so that you don't have to. Yeah. Just to let you need people like me on the wall.
Just to let you know, if we're stuck in a car and it's like our only chance is to possibly get eaten by big gigantic monsters or shoot ourselves, I'd rather take my chance with the eating monsters.
I'm waiting until something has me lifted up before I'm shooting myself.
Yeah.
Never go full miss.
Never go full miss. Oh, man. That ending of that movie is so brutal. That's
just a gut punch.
Look, you found your wife all screened up on spiders. Getting
that honestly.
Yeah.
Because I like the short story that it's based on, which is very similar, but has a completely different ending. I like the short story, but in movie form, I wasn't as big of a fan because, I hated the lady. I mean, she did her job in making me hate her.
I don't know.
I'm not as big a fan as of the grocery stuff. I'm more a big fan of the giant Cthulhu interdimensional things coming to grab you. So, But that ending. Whew.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Whew. How does it end in the book? Spoilers.
Spoilers. They are looking for signs of life. They leave the story. They leave, I believe, kind of like a journal thing of what happened. They go back to the house where the wife was, and she's gone. So they're leaving. I forget exactly, but it's more of a, they're going to keep traveling to see how far the mist goes type thing, you know?
Oh, okay. So it doesn't really have like...
It doesn't have an ending.
Oh, okay.
They escaped, okay. Basically. There's no suicide.
So that's a Stephen King story that someone kind of ended happily. Opposite of the movie, right?
Quite frankly, genocide is happier than the end of the movie. That is the worst, most depressing ending I've ever seen.
From what you're saying, though, we really
that there's
don't,
hope.
Yeah, that there's hope. But we also don't know if on the very next page, if Stephen King were to continue to write that scene doesn't happen. I mean, because that's
Stephen King says he loved the ending that Frank Darabont chose.
Did he really?
Yeah. It was better than his ending for his story. But man, that's bleak.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't do that to a viewer. That was gosh.
Yeah, because I did not. You know, the movie's. You know, I mean, it's
decent.
Yeah.
But the ending elevates it.
Oh, it does. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But it's weird. The ending elevates it, but yet. Doesn't make me want to go back and watch it again. Like sometimes you watch the ending of a movie and you're like, "Oh, now I want to go see."
Yeah, I'm gonna go see that again. Yeah. I want to see how it got to. Yeah,
I want the Usual Suspects. Let's just watch it again from the beginning. You know, or Seven or whatever.
Yeah,
but that one.
Yeah, that was one. Yeah, I agree with you.
Though I did wonder why he just didn't. If they knew that was what was going to happen, why he didn't just line two of them up. See whether or not maybe the bullet would go through.
He wanted a humane death. He didn't want to do a trick shot. I don't know. That's just my guess. Would it be humane? They're like, oh, just do it. All right. Whoa.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Did you count your bullet before?
Still, wow.
Why couldn't you, gone on a search for a hose? And just got out of your car for a second, hooked up the exhaust with a hose.
Maybe
a hose and some duct tape. You could take you all out in your sleep.
Yeah. Peaceful, nice peaceful way to go.
Yeah.
That would be.
See?
Yeah.
I think these things through. That's why I'm a dangerous person to know.
That's right. In the middle of the night, Sam's tired.
Why are we getting sleepy, Chris? Don't worry about it, man. It'll all be over soon. Oh, come on, dude! Come on, man!
I'm practical. That's all I'm saying. Practical and humane.
There you go. Oh, all man. Right. All right.
Are we ready for my R. Kelly?
I think so.
All right. Mine is a 1994 film based on a short story from different seasons, just like Stand By Me. The short story was called Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's such a good movie, too.
And the movie is The Shawshank Redemption, starring Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman and a host of other people. It's just, honestly, is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
Zero supernatural happens. It's just, of all things, a prison drama set in 1947. So, about an innocent man sentenced to life in prison and the relationships he makes there. And, it's just a story. Yeah. It's just a story of life. It's
exactly.
So good.
And it's, you think, initially you'd think a movie that takes place in a prison would not be as uplifting as that movie is.
It's strange. It takes you down, it lifts you up.
Yeah.
Takes you on a wide variety of things. It makes you want your life to be narrated by Morgan Freeman.
I know.
Just like The Longest Yard.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I wonder if you could pay Morgan Freeman just to like narrate.
Make a documentary about you. I mean,
like narrate certain portions of your life. Like, hey, your 40th birthday or something like that.
At the guys talk about the Stephen King novels.
Exactly.
That's what we need right there.
That's exactly. It was Friday, August 18th, when all of my issues decided to talk about Stephen King.
I don't know how we got onto the subject of Morgan Freeman narrating, but we are here now.
They're the only group of people who could talk about a shit at number two. But move on to piss.
At number one.
For the top of his choices. A podcast that refers to bodily functions as their top and second choices. So yeah, that would be great.
I would love that. Yeah. Man. Yeah. That is a great movie, though. That's one of those movies where every time it's on TV,
seriously,
I'm like, I'll just watch this. I'll just sit here.
And even though I own it on DVD
and
could stream it on any one of our service, I will still sit there and watch it with the commercials.
Exactly.
Yeah. Get busy living. Or get busy watching. Shawshank Redemption for the 47th time. I choose watching the Shawshank Redemption for the 47th time.
Well, I got a Usher confession here.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
You know, I've watched Shawshank, but I can't. I like it.
Oh, Sam.
I like it. I have no complaints about it.
All right.
But you know, when after watching it, there was like everyone
tread
like you
softly
guys.
Because you tread
everyone's like, it's such a great movie, and I'm like, it's a good movie, but I guess I don't talk about it as in reference as you guys do and other people because other guy friends are like, Shawshank was just great, and I'm just like. Yeah, it was good. I got no complaints about it, but I don't think I'm as passionate as other people about Shawshank.
I don't think I've ever felt more disappointed in you.
I mean, I have no complaints about it, and I'm like I said, I'm not complaining about it or anything. But I've never seen a movie that has so much passion behind it. As soon as you say it, it's like Shawshank. Oh, we love Shawshank, and it's like. I'm like, did I miss something? I swear, I've seen this movie several times.
All I know is that if Morgan Freeman were narrating this right now, this is what he would say. I'd like to tell you that Sam was able to fight off Rick and Chris.
He put up a good fight.
But the sisters won this time.
He tried as hard as to explain himself, but the ridiculousness of not liking Shawshank befuddled both Rick and Chris.
And proved to be Sam's undoing. I'm just saying that right now on a rafter, we're going to carve in Sam was here.
Again, I'm not complaining about it at all. And I'm just.
So, Sam.
Yeah.
would you stand up in a court of law and say that you don't hold the Shawshank Redemption in the same reverence as us? Would you swear on the Holy Bible?
It's just
get the rifle.
It's like it's just one of those things. I was like, I like the movie. I have nothing against the movie. I have no complaints about the movie. But yeah, it wasn't on my list as a movie that I would like. Oh, it's on. I guess I don't know. And I don't know why. I mean, it's a good movie.
Maybe that should be our next podcast.
Why
I was going to say our top five movies that if we come by it on the TV, we're watching it.
That should be. That would be a good topic.
I mean, because it wouldn't be up there.
Honestly, though, it is.
It's a great movie. Yeah. Like I said, it's a great movie.
You don't have the same reverence for it. You know, it's everyone has their own opinions and.
Even though Sam's is wrong.
Thank you, Morgan Freeman. Thank you, Morgan Freeman.
Oh my God. I like prison movies to begin with, like A Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah.
A Shawshank Redemption, A Green Mile. I like.
I thought you were going to go women's prison movies. So.
Hey, you know, again, won't turn it off.
Won't turn it off.
I like the idea because it's, you know, symbolic. We're all born into our own prisons, whatever.
I created my own prison.
So, did you just creed me?
No, not at all.
I will not be creeded. Under no circumstances.
You got Scott stabbed.
I will not be stabbed. I've been stabbed in the
ass. Did I just make Chris shake his head?
You did, Sam. Mark the minute and the hour. You just...
Vengeance is mine!
Oh, my gosh. I will not accept that with arms wide open. I will not.
Oh, man.
You will not take me higher. Oh, my gosh. But regardless, now I know why you don't like the Shawshank Redemption. It's all those Creed lyrics up in your brain, rotting it from the inside.
It's corrupted every prison movie.
We still have the longest yard.
Oh, man.
So the Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
Can't believe I've been creeded.
You've been creeded.
I'm going to go home and take a shower. And sing the crying game to myself.
Oh man,
anything good I had to say about the Shawshank Redemption
has just been destroyed.
That's the emotional equivalent of shitting my pants.
Right there.
So I'm just embarrassed and feel dirty.
Oh man. I just don't even know where to go from there.
Rick is befuddled.
I'm a little befuddled right now. Yeah.
It was 2017 when Chris lost the will to live.
Oh, man. All right. I'm going to try to pull myself together here and give you guys my number one, R. Kelly Memorial.
How can you taint R. Kelly with Creed?
Well, my number one, is the reason why I picked it. I both love the movie, kind of for different reasons than the book. It's actually the first Stephen King book I ever read, and that was The Shining.
It's the first Stephen King book I ever read, too.
Is it really? That is crazy.
It would have been on my list except you included it.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I absolutely loved, and it's funny because I'm not sure why it ended up this way, but like I ended up reading the book before I ever saw the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's funny because I think the movie would be kind of hard to understand if you didn't read the book and some elements of it. Because, like, you're talking about The Shining and all that kind of stuff. You know, Stanley Kubrick's The Shining has some really creepy scenes in it that are just...
Those twins.
Yeah, the twins. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's all you need to say.
Almost. Right. If I was in a supermarket...
And
turn a corner, and there were twin girls in blue dresses at the other end.
Yeah,
and a tricycle like nearby or whatever.
Come play with us forever.
That's the last time I go to Kroger's. That's all I'm saying.
That's it right there. The Stanley Kubrick The Shining doesn't really capture the book.
It's strange because Stephen King doesn't like it at all.
He doesn't like it at all?
He does not like the Stanley Kubrick version.
No.
Stanley Kubrick made a masterful movie, but it was different.
It was different, And, you know, they've made a made-for-TV movie version of The Shining 2, which is kind of close to the book, but it's not the same effect.
I think it suffers from being on regular TV. I think you make a Shining on Netflix right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh. It would be amazing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, it's not going to have Scatman Crothers in it.
Yeah. Which was, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I loved Scatman Crothers in that role.
You know who I didn't like in that? I didn't like the mom.
Shelley Duvall.
Yeah. Her performance was really weird to me.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like...
I think she had problems with Stanley Kubrick throughout the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, he was a methody director, I believe. Treated her like crap.
To
make her uncomfortable.
Yeah. And it kind of comes through, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of, and that movie definitely gives you like that uncomfortable feeling as you watch it, I think, some things. But it's funny to me because some of the dialogue that happens in the Stanley Kubrick, The Shining, is like straight from the book, too. Mm-hmm. There's like moments in that book I remember reading just like that really just kind of creeped me out. And the one that I remember just reading it, and I just had to, stop because I was just like, ugh, chills up my spine. And it's it's kind of in the movie, but it happens a different way, but it's where Jack Torrance goes into a room because he thinks somebody's in there, and then he thinks somebody's in the bathroom. And the shower curtain's closed, and he thinks he sees a silhouette of somebody in the bathtub, but he's not really sure. And he's trying to get the courage to maybe open up the shower curtain. But then finally, he's just like, I'm not going to do it. There's nobody there. He walks out of the room. And then all he hears is the noise of the shower curtain rings going across the bar. And it's just like reading that. And I'm just like, oh! And even talking about it now, I've got a little bit goosebumpy. Because that's just like, that's like awesome.
Yeah, there's just a lot.
And just like... Jack Torrance slowly going insane in the book, and Jack Nicholson does a pretty good job in the movie as well. And it's just, it's the father son dynamic in that book too was just really,
it's a great book. Yeah, it is a great book and a great movie.
Yeah.
What a strong way to start your writing career, novel career. Going Carrie, Salem's Lot, The Shining.
Right. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's amazing, really.
I believe that was his first three of them. I forget after that, but Christine.
Yeah, that sounds about right, that's a great movie, too.
Yeah, really. Well, yeah, I'm a big fan of movies. I could never get behind the possessed car idea of it.
Yeah.
For a lovely car.
That's a great pick for number one.
Yeah.
All right.
Want to talk to some honorable mentions?
Yes, let's do that.
I don't have them written down, but I probably have a couple of them written down. The Mist, obviously.
I was thinking of that as well, but the same thing. I've only seen the movie, and the ending of that movie is such a gut punch.
Yeah,
it's just like, man. But it's. It's hard to argue that movie is not well done, though, even though it's, painful to see that.
Cycle the Werewolf.
Oh,
I enjoyed the short stories with the Bernie Wrightson, I believe it was.
Artwork
was just beautiful.
It is, yep.
And then made it to a movie that did not age well, but
but it had Busey in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dead Zone.
Dead Zone. Yeah. I've only seen the movie, but that movie is really good.
Yeah, the books are very similar.
Is it?
Yeah. And it led to one of my favorite Saturday Night Live sketches, where Christopher Walken was like the incidental.
Psychic,
where he would touch you and tell you something boring.
Yeah, I one of the ones that I kind of was thinking about and toying around. And again, this was one where I've only seen the movie, but I thought the movie was really good. Was Apple Pupil?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, really an interesting idea. I think, you know, and it just, you know, Ian McKellen.
Yeah. Directed by Bryan Singer.
Oh, really? I didn't realize Bryan Singer did that.
Singer.
So yeah.
We have to mention Pet Sematary.
I was saving that for last for a reason.
Oh, so, okay.
Right. And but no, not only not the movie.
Okay.
Not the book.
Not the book.
But the Ramones theme song.
Oh, I don't want to get
buried in a pet cemetery.
I don't want to live my life again.
Yeah, that, I heard that on XM radio during my free trial. It was so fun to hear.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, I remember.
I had forgotten that existed.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, in fact, it's funny because I had Pet Sematary down, but. Yeah, until you just mentioned it. I'm like, man, that's right. That song's awesome. I forgot about that song, too.
And I want to talk about Maximum Overdrive for 1 second.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just the giant green goblin.
Yeah. That's not in the book, right?
I don't know that I read the book.
Yeah.
I think it's a short story.
Short. I think it's a short story. I like that movie, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not great.
Yeah.
But...
directed by Stephen King, though.
Yeah.
A movie that cracks me up because Bronson Pinchot is in it is The Langoliers.
Don't be ridiculous.
And that was like, because all the other movies he's in, like Beverly Hills Cop and everything, he's a funny guy. But in The Langoliers, man, he was a crazy nut job. Like,
I don't know if I ever seen this movie.
You never seen Langoliers is about
a TV movie.
And there's a plane that's flying in the air, and what happens is people are on the plane. Some of them are asleep, some of them are awake, and all of a sudden these people wake up, and most of the people are gone from the plane. The plane's still in the air, and they've all vanished. And so there is, I think, one of the co-pilots, he was asleep at the time. And so he takes control of the plane and they land at the airport. And they're trying to figure out what's going on because there's no people around. And the air is dry. And when they taste food, it tastes nasty. And they find out that they time traveled.
They're disjointed from time.
Into the past. Well, it kind of, the theory is the reason why people don't time travel to the past because the Langoliers, these creatures come
and eat it,
eat the past. So that's why no one has ever traveled back to the past. And so throughout several of the events, you know, people are kind of going crazy because they got their own problem and everything and going through. And you finally get to see the Langoliers coming through, eating up reality. And they have to figure out a way to somehow get back into the present time or else they'll get eaten by the Langoliers.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is.
It's a short story too.
Really. Yeah. It's not like great, but it's just fun to see Bronson Pinchot freak out.
Oh, I can imagine.
I liked him in True Romance too.
Oh, yeah. He was in that, wasn't he? There was a
cokehead director or something.
Producer,
I forget what he was.
there was a short Stephen King story, and I was trying to think of the name of it for this, and it's real short. I don't even think it's 100 pages. I think it's like like a 50-page vampire thing or something like that. And I remember, and I can't remember the exact premise of it, but I just remember this one thing that they talk about in the book where, and I think it happens in an airport as well, but this guy is looking in the mirror, and he thought he heard somebody walk in, but he looks in the mirror, he's washing his hands, and he doesn't see anybody in the mirror, so he doesn't think anybody's there. But then all of a sudden he sees a red stream of blood going to the urinal. Is this ringing a bell to anybody? No? Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyways, then he turns around and sees that there's somebody standing there, and it's this vampire guy. And I can't remember exactly how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
I think the guy just kind of is frozen with fear, and I think the vampire just walks back out. And that's essentially the end of the mm-hmm. story. I think something happened before that. I think where a bunch of people died, and he didn't know how they died. And then that vampire's there. But I just thought the imagery that he talks about the red stream of blood going into the urinals.
Oh.
Yeah, kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. We need to get that checked.
Yeah, right? I think he gets me antibiotics and clear that right up.
You are a vampire. You don't bleed blood. That's never good.
Yeah, that's not good. That is crazy.
R. Kelly would not approve.
R. Kelly would not approve of that. Heck no. So, I guess, do we have any other honorable mentions? Was that
They come back. They come
back
again. They come back for more.
Yeah.
They come back for a second helping.
Yeah, there's a lot of good.
Got the Night Shift.
And I mean, we didn't even talk about the Dark Tower series at all.
No, I've not read it.
I've only read the first three books.
Yeah.
And I loved them. But then there was like a space of time where he stopped writing, and then you got to pick the books back up, and now I believe it's finished, but I've read
a bunch of his stuff. I'm not going to lie. I mean,
yeah.
Like, and I've enjoyed almost all of what I've read, at least to some extent, you know.
Even
if I didn't love the book, I still liked it.
Yeah. I started Needful Things. I never finished it. I really liked it.
It was all right. I mean, let's see. Just going through novels. Here's he has 56 of them.
56!
And of those 56, so we'll just check. We'll just go through them real quick. Carrie.
Yeah. There you go. Good.
Do you read them?
I did not
read
it.
Or see the movie? It's a good book. They're all going to laugh at you. Salem's Lot, The Shining, Rage, Stand, The Long Walk, The Dead Zone, Firestarter, The Road Work. Bachman book.
Ah, okay.
Cujo, The Running Man, The Gunslinger, Christine, Pet Sematary, Cycle of the Werewolf, The Talisman, Thinner, The Eyes of the Dragon, The Next Dark Tower, Drawing of the Three, Misery. So up to 1987, that's 73 to 87. That is a pretty strong series of books.
It is, honestly.
Tommyknockers, The Dark Half. That's a good one. Yeah. Another Dark Tower 3, Needful Things, Gerald's Game, Dolores Claiborne. Or Claiborne. I wasn't that into Dolores Claiborne. Insomnia, Rose Matter. Now we're getting into this middle period there. There's those series of books.
I think I read Dolores Claiborne. I think get that and Rose Matter confused, but I think Dolores Claiborne is the one I read. What happens with, isn't there something with the well or something?
Dead husband or something.
I
don't remember. Yeah. The Green Mile, Desperation and the Regulators, Dark Tower, Bag of Bones, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, The Plant. I didn't read The Plant.
Yeah.
Never heard that.
Yeah, I don't think
Dreamcatcher, Black House, From a Buick 8.
Oh, Dreamcatcher's terrible.
Yeah.
Is it?
The Colorado Kid, a couple more Dark Tower, Cell, Lacey's Story, Blaze, which was a Bachman book that he wrote around that period of time but never released. Then he read it again, decided to redo it and put it out there. I have that one.
Uh-huh.
Duma Key is a pretty good one. Under the Dome is really good. It's another one, though, I didn't like the ending. I hear 11/22/63 is fantastic, and I own it, but I haven't read it yet.
Is it, have they made that, have they adapted that to a...
It's a television show.
Show. Yeah, okay.
And then Mr. Mercedes, I read that, which is actually pretty good. It takes place in Ohio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like he did a three-book series, Mr. Mercedes, Finder's Keeper, and End of Watch, which are a trilogy about one detective.
Oh.
And they're pretty good.
Okay. So there you go. Whoa. Pretty significant body of work, I would say. Oh, my gosh,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
And that doesn't include all the short stories. His master short story.
Yeah.
Probably more so than anyone else that I've read, because he does it so much. And
yeah.
Most people just... Him and Neil Gaiman, it's like their short story anthology books. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because I love Neil Gaiman's short stories, too. They're just...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nicholas was. 100
I
words.
I love fantastic. That. Yeah, yeah, it is.
So familiar?
Good. No.
I'm going to tell you after the podcast.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. All right.
All right.
I guess that's it. Thanks for listening.
Yep. Check us out on our Facebook. All right. Facebook at All My Issues, yeah. Our website at allmyissues.com.
Yeah, Twitter. YouTube,
Twitter.
And you can check us out on Stitcher. Look for us on there and on YouTube, All My Issues. All right. Thanks for listening.
See ya.
Later.